Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March. I have no idea.
Third.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Wait.
Definitely the fourth.
Fourth. Okay. 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 Cool.
Happy March, cool. Everybody.
Mommy's
Happy
birthday.
March. July.
Happy almost birthday, Mom.
All happy
time.
Birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, by the time you say it will be happy, yeah, happy birthday to you. How do you say it when somebody's passed away birthday?
Happy heavenly birthday.
You
happy
glad
people do it.
You glad they be like, happy birthday in heaven.
Happy birthday in heaven to my pops. His birthday was March 20th. So happy birthday to him. And for some reason, I've always had this in my head since I was a kid. Happy birthday to Marlon Jackson. I don't know why. Of all the Jacksons, Marlon's birthday. I still remember for some reason his birthday is March 12th. I don't know why I have that information, but happy birthday,
Welcome
Marlon.
To the old that nigga podcast, everybody.
That nigga got a picture of a Jet magazine somewhere burned in his head.
Word.
He read that shit back in like 82.
Oh, shit, my birthday, March 12th.
That's hilarious. Also, happy belated birthday to Clifford Smith, a.k.a. the Tekalion Stallion, a.k.a. Method Cal, a.k.a. Johnny Blaze. AKA
me and Jeff just gonna go to mute so y'all can have y'all minute.
Y'all have your moment. Y'all go and have it now.
There's something very special about the way that he is aging.
God, blessing. It's a blessing. That's all. It's just a blessing. We're thankful that he exists. We're thankful that he's in the gym. We're thankful that Tamika ain't out here sniping all our accounts all the fucking time. Shout out to Tamika Smith. And shout out to Sophia Chang, who used to be the Woo's manager, who posted a picture of her holding Meth's hand and resting her head on his shoulder. And I was immediately just mad that she gets to be that close to him. For 30 years. It's not fair. That's it. Just, belated shout out to him. Also, do any of y'all observe Lent? Ash Wednesday was yesterday. Wednesday.
I do not, and I'm kind of disappointed that I missed out on Pancake Day, which was Tuesday. I forgot about it. So, Black tradition of Fat Tuesday, if you're not in the South, you eat pancakes for dinner.
Eat pancakes. I think I'm observing this year, but I'm late because it was a hectic week. I got to figure out what I'm giving up. I haven't properly observed in years, but I feel like I need to.
Okay. For me, I've been challenged to a little bit of self-care every day. So... Good Am I failing so far? Absolutely.
Well,
but, I was about to say, what does that look like?
You're making an
that
effort.
That looks like just making an effort to pull away and do something purely for myself.
Good.
Which I never get to do.
Good for you.
Hell of a week. So hopefully I can get up on it and get some time to myself. But just for an example, this morning, Ivy couldn't go to school because the supply chain has fucked up Travis's truck getting repaired.
Wow.
So he has a rental car. The rental company is shit. So the rental car didn't start this morning.
Oh my God.
So Travis has my truck. And by the way, it's snowing and 0 degrees. So we can't go anywhere.
Yes, you jammed up.
No self-care, at least until Hubs gets home from work. And even then, he got to shovel this new snow.
Yeah, so maybe tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow. Prayerfully tomorrow. I want to say, give a quick shout out to Jermaine Dupri. I spent, as I said on the show last week, I just got back from Atlanta last night. I was down, I guess, almost 9 days, 8.5. I got the taste. Jermaine Dupri has a vegan ice cream, JD's Vegan. They sell, I think, only in the Atlanta area. I know it's sold only at Walmart's. And I don't think it's stretched out of that south, or maybe it's the southeast region. I don't know if it's stretched out past that. But I got a chance to taste the strawberry one, which was phenomenal. That was the first time I actually had any type of ice cream in probably 4 years because of vegan and being lactose intolerant. So I haven't had ice cream in forever.
You just got all the black men.
Yeah, I got all the black men.
You got the gout. You lactose intolerant. Like, just all black men panel.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Wait, did you add some? Didn't you say you were going to be pescatarian and add fish back?
Yeah, I ate fish every now and again. Yeah, for the protein of it, because I was dragging too much. I didn't have enough energy. But the ice cream is great. I only had the strawberry. There's an apple butter. Apparently, that's the best one. And like when his shit comes into Walmart, you got to be kind of be lucky to get it, because it apparently just flies right out. So I just want to say, peace to Jermaine. You've done a great job with the ice cream, and I appreciate you, brother. Y'all got any shouts before we get it rolling?
I feel like I do, but I can't remember, so it doesn't matter.
Okay.
I just want to shout out paperwork and insurance companies. Like, thank you for keeping my cortisol levels high, giving me a reason to be going every day. Like, amen. I'm so fed up right now. I cannot even. It's a lot.
I don't want to say peace to the young ladies that's security in Bruh's building. Denisha, and I forget the other one.
Denisha. Miss
Denisha. Yeah, and I forget good, the other
she
one.
Good, she
oh,
good
no, they're folks. Nice ladies. They're very nice ladies. Very folks, nice, man. Very nice, very nice. You know, hey, Miss Sled. They're really good people.
Yeah, they always put a handle on that name.
Oh, yeah, it's always a handle.
First name.
It's always a handle. That's what I say. Shout out to them. I doubt they even know this podcast exists, but I wanted to give them a shout out because they showed love the whole trip. Let's get started. Let's jump into... You know what? Let's knock out. Let's do it. Well, what you watching? Let's just knock that out now. So, what, bro? You go first. What you watching?
Well, I started watching Worst Roommate Ever.
Oh yeah, I got that on my list.
Yeah, so I started watching that. I fell asleep on episode one, but it was already crazy.
I heard,
because I started late, but yeah, man, that seems to be like that's gonna be an easy binge, because I think it's only like 5 episodes.
Uh-huh.
So I'm probably just gonna like buckle down on Saturday with a sandwich.
And, right. That first episode, I was like, I gotta take a break after.
Yeah, the first episode was wild, but it was really like, the idea that scammers and like people who've done these sorts of things is like this new thing is wild to me, because this has been going on since forever. When it was far harder to catch them. It was a lot easier.
Right.
When you were able to, that's why I'm always like, you got caught for a murder in 1963. Like, nigga, you could just get on a train and be a new person in 2 weeks in 1963. What are you talking about? Yeah. So I've always found it fascinating, but they really, it was really interesting, man. And it looks, I mean, when I say interesting, I mean, people did get killed, right? Like, so I don't want to make like light of that happening, but it looks like a very interesting piece on Netflix.
Yeah, I can say it's definitely on my list of stuff to watch. And now that I finished Love is Blind Japan, we'll get into Love is Blind in a second. Yeah. That's next thing up for me. Nye, what you watching?
Well, as everybody on social media knows, I've been invested in Love is Blind here in the U.S. And the reunion episode just aired this morning. And over the past week, somehow I became Black Twitter's like... First of all, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm distracted because I'm laughing at Inka because she's doing like a hand game with Ivy for her cameras.
I have to dance when this song comes.
It's hilarious.
It's necessary. Sorry.
Anyway, I know I get it. It's like, yeah, I'm just looking. I was about to start bopping along. So anyway, somehow over the past week, I've become like Black Twitter's Love is Blind expert, Lady Whistledown, with all the secrets and the tea and everything. And I've even had my favorite cast members have found me on Twitter and been talking to me and shit, which made my day. So anyway,
shout out to Ayana and Jared. We love
you. Shout out to Ayana and Jared. Shout out to Team Jones. And shout out to, and this is a bit of a spoiler for those who do watch, the reason I love them, they're the one Black couple on the show. But I a lot of people didn't believe in them because Jared was edited to kind of look like a player. And Ayana comes across like very vulnerable, but there was one moment early in the show that he needed to apologize for. So he apologized publicly on the reunion, And I had to give him a shout out for his verbiage, because what he said was, "I'm sorry for making you look crazy." And I was like, "That is a black man's apology, a black husband's apology to a black wife." Like, he wasn't like,
was. The body language was there. He had the arm around.
Like, sorry for the conversation. I'm sorry for. He was like, "I'm sorry for making you look crazy," because that's what we care about. It's not so much what you did; it's what you did in public that made us look crazy. So shout out to them. What else am I watching? Nothing else worth noting, but I'm excited because there's a show on Netflix called The Outlander, which is like a history slash romance.
You mentioned this before. Yes. You said that I would like it. Now I keep forgetting the name
of it. I think you would. It's called The Outlander. It's back on, it's about this white woman who traveled back in time. It's a whole whatever. But and she'd be all up in the business with shit. But it comes back on Sunday, I think. There's a bunch of shit coming back over the next week, which I'm excited about. So there's that. There is something else. There was another season of something that came back this week, and I literally don't remember. I'll remember it next week. So that's me. Inka, what you got?
All right. I always fuck up at this part of the show because my memory is terrible. But so Trav and I finally started Snowfall. We're only a couple episodes in. God damn, this is a stressful tale of a drug dealer. But it's interesting to see how he fell into it.
Oh, you started it from season one?
From the very beginning, episode. Yeah. Oh, okay. I've never watched it. So yeah, excited about that. We watched the principal from Abbott Elementary. I forget her name, but she has a really short comedy special on Netflix.
Oh,
you got
it? Is it Janelle Adams, I think her name is? Something like that. Okay.
Forgive me for messing up her name, but it was so funny. Like, I was drinking a ginger beer and like almost had a spit take in it.
I need to watch that. So okay.
It's only like 15 minutes. It's so funny. Because I have Peacock from watching Bel Air, which I really love, and I'm also watching. I watched that horrible Jennifer Lopez movie, Marry Me.
Which one is that? Is that with Owen Wilson?
It's the
trying to go back to her Made in Manhattan days.
It's trash.
Yeah. So it gave me all of the rom-com I needed. The only thing that made it awful to me was how much of her singing is in it.
Oh, yeah.
She plays like a pop singer. Star, yeah. And I was right, like, this is hard. So if they just took out like her performances of the movie, it would have been like the best thing to watch.
If they edit like 35% of the screen time, it would have been good.
She would have been fire.
Jennifer Lopez out of the Jennifer Lopez movie would have been straight.
She would have been lit.
It gave me like all the cheese I was looking for and all the romance, but the singing, like it was painful. Too much. Okay. And then what else? And I think is somebody somewhere, is that the season finale we just watched?
I feel like there might be one more.
I don't know. It was really good.
It was really good. It was really good.
That's a good show. That's just a good show. You don't have nothing to do. You got like 3 hours to just, you're trying to waste. It's a good show. It's quirky.
Because, I mean, I guess spoilers. Nobody, I'm going to be watching it. But like, I think the mom might have killed herself. Because remember, the mom
outside. Yeah. That was the cliffhanger.
And then walks into the barn. So I think we might have one. I think we might have this week might be the last week. But yeah, I really like
that. That's intense though. Like what's going on with the sister and the store and the cheating.
They take it places that you don't expect to go. It's like, oh shit, I didn't know that was gonna be a turn, you know?
And it's like somewhat relatable if you've ever been on the outside of anything. Or if you're like the black sheep of your family.
Black sheep of the family,
thing to,
exactly.
But that's it. I mean, still on season 3, episode 1 of Bubble Guppies. That seems to be sticking this week, so.
It's lit. I watched, it's not new, but I watched the latest Wonder Years episode because I didn't know it was a new Wonder Years episode coming on.
You told us it was the season finale. It was not.
I think they did the mid-season thing. They did 12.
They took a break for the Olympics or something.
Yeah, exactly. But it was good. Yeah. This week was really good. It was about Dean having the first and only, he said, of his career, black teacher. And obviously,
black
like
male teacher.
What was that?
The black male teacher.
Black male teacher, yes. And you know, about how we can't forget this is supposed to be 1968, 69, Montgomery, Alabama. It's not present time. And he comes in, he's like, you know, doing stuff with African drums, and he's being very Afrocentric, and, you know, wears a dashiki and da-da-da-da. And the kids get into it, but of course there's those parents that are like, yo, and he actually kind of, and I get why he did it, he kind of twisted, flipped the scales a bit, so the black kids were kind of included a lot more than they normally were, mm-hmm. and some of the white kids complained to their parents, but he's not picking me, and he's like, yeah, because y'all get picked all the fucking time.
Yeah. Like, peace to the writers of the show for making the snotty little white girls named Karen.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a great another great episode by them. And you know, we could jump into the deep into the Lovers Blind thing. I just want to start by saying I finished the Lovers Blind Japan season. It was like very compelling, and like I said last week, it makes you really pay attention because you have to read the subtitles.
It's very telling that you would watch that before the U.S. one.
Yeah, because I'm not typing it, right? So like, you can't, like, walk away and be like, oh, I have it on in the back, because you don't understand what they're saying. So you have to watch it. You can't.
Yeah, like, I was telling Jeff before we started taping, I kept putting it on and forgetting that it's subtitles. I kept putting it on while I'm trying to work. And I was like, oh, yeah, I got to actually.
You don't understand shit. Like, there's, like, maybe four instances throughout the whole series where they speak English. Because one guy worked in California for a while, and there's one girl in there that I think might have even been born in the U.S., so she's kind of dual. And then there's another girl who doesn't even reveal she can speak English till like episode like 9. I was like, oh shit, you speak English? You know, so there's very little English on the show. You have to kind of watch it. But it's just interesting to watch it because of the cultural differences between us and obviously Japan. They're way more reserved. They're not as outwardly affectionate as we might be. There's a very, very high regard for parents. You know, like it's like, my parents have to like you or this shit ain't happening. You know, and they ain't like, oh, fuck my moms, I'm gonna do it. Ain't none of that. And they're very nervous meeting the parents because they realize like, if the mother and father doesn't like me, even though I might like him, this relationship's over. So it's that. And just even the way they speak to each other, like, I guess it must be customary in Japan, like, because one guy says it one time, he was talking to his girl and ended up breaking up. And, she's talking, and he's like, I have to interrupt you. I'm sorry. Like, they don't interrupt each other ever.
Right.
Ever. Like, you, they,
and, they're very big on, they're very big on social protocol.
And even if you're taking long time to answer, they just sit there. Like, they just, this is a thing that they do. They don't. So this is very interesting, but it was really good. Like, only two of the couples made it to the altar, the Lovers Blind altar. A couple got close. But, you know, things just kept, they just kept falling away and falling apart. And it was just, I mean, I highly recommend people, if you like Love is Blind, definitely watch the Japan series. It's really good. I haven't started U.S. yet, so I'll let you know, y'all take this from here, because I haven't even dove in yet. So this, the U.S. ended, and the reunion was this week?
It came, the reunion dropped 3 a.m. today.
And like, I was awake watching
it. I watched. Well, what happened was, I had planned to not watch it until this morning, but I fell asleep last night because I was exhausted. I've been working on like 3 different things this week, and I was just really tired. So I fell asleep at like 9. I woke up at like 1:30. So I was like, well, fuck it, I might as well just stay up and watch the show. It's about to drop. But it's been interesting because last season's Love is Blind was great. And because of the way COVID hit, they ended up taking much longer between the two seasons than they planned. But even last season, only 2 couples made it to the altar and said yes. Let me say that. And one of them became like a quick fan favorite, the interracial couple.
Lauren and Cameron last season. Lauren and Cameron.
Yeah. So
they still together, correct?
Yeah. They're still together. Couples that got married last year.
They have like a YouTube show and everything.
Yeah, so they're like the social darlings. The other couple stays low. But going into this season already, like, you could tell energies were different. Some people's intentions seemed different. I mean, we definitely had some people on some bullshit last season. But there was no clear like favorite, fan favorite, right? And there was one couple who was actually both couples who said yes. No, two couples said yes. One couple who people were very divided about whether they want them together or not ends up saying no. That was like a big twist.
Okay.
And the other couple that said yes, the Black couple, because of the way the storyline had been set up with them, people didn't trust the husband, right? So he was getting drugged all over social media, and I was like, y'all, this is not that deep. But anyway, so people been waiting for the reunion because this one has been a very big, I don't remember it being this big the last time to see, are they still together? Are these people still together? Did they split up? Plus there was a start of like, there were a couple of triangles. So it was like, did this one who didn't get married, has he been messing with this other one, or are they still dating? I heard.
But it was triangles on the show.
Well, it was triangles.
There was a square.
I'm not sure which one I want to propose to, or like a chick saying yes to one guy when she really wanted the other guy, like that type of shit. So we had two situations of the dudes kind of being torn. Well, two that we know of dudes being torn between who to propose to.
Okay.
One that we knew of the woman being torn between who to say yes to, right? And what we found out now at the reunion is that there was actually another one that we didn't know about because somebody busted out. He was like, I should have just asked her to marry me and blah, blah, blah. We were all like, whoa, wait, what? What happened? So yeah.
This is hard to do without spoilers. You're doing a good job though. I'm probably just going to say all these people's names though.
It's been a ride because, you know, the way they release the episode, they do it over 3 weeks. So 4 weeks. So they do like five episodes, second week, the weddings, the third week, and then the reunion, the fourth week.
So they don't put all the episodes out at once.
No, they keep coming.
See, Japan put out the whole season.
Did they?
But when I watched, and that's I'm late. I could be late.
When I watched, you started it last week, right?
About a week and a half ago, so maybe I'm late because all the episodes are up now. Everything.
I think you were late.
I could be.
Yeah. So possibly. But anyway, this has been different because there have been so many questions people had about the relationship statuses and who was really into whom and who was dealing with who, that everybody's been all over cast socials for the past week and stuff, just looking for clues and signals. And the cast has been really careful. I think producers have told them to be careful because there's been such a frenzy leading up to the reunion. Like, the reunion preview didn't even go out to press. I was looking because I have a media Netflix account and I was like, let's see if they got this joint. And I was almost scared to see it because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to not spoil it if I watch they released like two preview clips. That was it. And they came out like yesterday and day before yesterday. So
they got that excitement and that energy sky high for people to watch it.
Yep. It's been crazy. So yeah, it's been a ride. It's kind of been fun. And there's one guy, this is a guy who really kept it going. There's this one guy who is Indian. He's an immigrant. Okay. And only dates white women. Used to be bigger, lost weight. He's obsessed with, like, he wants a blonde, skinny girl so bad. And it's like he's cosplaying being, like, a tech bro. Like, you know, he's a dude, like, he'll take screenshots of his Tesla steering wheel. You know, and he keeps talking about reservations at Nobu. And I was like, fam, it's not 2001. Like, nobody gives a fuck about your Nobu reservation. Like,
if you log on to Open Table right now, you could get a reservation for today for 5 p.m.
I haven't even made a reservation in Nobu in maybe a decade. I just go. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, oh, if there's not a table, there's not a table. Whatever. Sit at the bar, something.
Eat at the bar, exactly.
And Nobu at Chicago? Like, you ain't, like, at
least. Yeah, it ain't Malibu, I would kind of understand you, but yeah. Chi-Town, bro, like, chill out.
Like, I got Nobu in Chicago. You know, so it's like, he's this, and right now he's in Miami, he's going to be, he's a vet, but he DJs on the side, he's like, I'm going to be DJing at the Dream. Nobody cares, nigga, like, so he is hated. Like, nobody likes him. Cast don't like
him. He's a terrible person.
He's an awful person. He's a narcissist.
He had so many opportunities to redeem himself in this season. So cool. And the woman who, I mean, spoiler alert, but he ends up choosing the Indian woman, Deepthi.
Neither of them have ever dated Indian people before. They both only date white people.
Right. But Deepthi is like, not only is she beautiful, she is like salt of the earth good people. And like,
yeah,
kind. It comes through in everything that she does. And he treated her like a stepsister of adult parents who got married after he was out the house.
Like the problem terribly. Is Deep's also lost a lot of weight, and I guess she has some skin that she has to get rid of. So he kept saying through the whole show that he wasn't physically attracted to her. And nobody could figure out why. We just figured it was just because, and I think a large part of it is just because she's not white. But
beautiful girl though, even like great body. We saw her in the bikini and all that. Like she looks good. It was ridiculous. Good.
But apparently he was saying behind the scenes, like he was talking about the skin and he was doing all this other shit. But he kept talking about the fact that he had never had this friendship and a partnership. So I don't know if he's one of those dudes who, like, he's never considered actually being friends with the chick he's dating.
A lot of niggas like that in all cultures. They don't understand how to be friends.
He couldn't reconcile it. Like, he was like, I want this every day. I need to come home to this every day. I need this friendship. I literally never had this, but I just can't get with it physically. And I need an animalistic. He kept talking about needing that animalistic attraction. Like, what are you talking
about? He's got some weird self-hate issues going on, too, because, like, even his groomsmen, like, his whole side of the wedding was white people.
Everybody's white.
Except for his parents.
Everybody's white. He doesn't do black at all. So, anyway, yeah. So, he's most hated. He's been keeping a lot of the post-show drama going because he knew he went into the reunion and decided he was going to double down. Like, I think he went into the show like, I'm going to be the villain. And it's going to play well. And it's like, this is not Real Housewives. This is a dating show, right? It's a love show. And you played the one, like, you were cruel. Like, you weren't the lovable, charming asshole. You were cruel to the woman on a dating show, on a married show. That does not play well. And so it seems like he came into the reunion the same way. Like, I'm going to double down on the asshole shit. And he realized, like, halfway through, because Nick Lachey was basically like, Nick and Vanessa Lachey basically cussed this dude out. And you could tell he was taken aback, like, whoa, because they were not softballing. They were not, like, being neutral.
It was like, you want some fuck shit.
They were not like, nah, I'm just playing. Nick was like, no, I don't like people like you who do X, Y, Z. He was like, whoa, Nick Lachey. Nick was like, I'm just saying. And Vanessa, like, they were going off. And I think that's when he kind of realized, like, I think he thought the cast was talking badly about him for entertainment value. And I think that's what it took for him to realize, like, oh shit, like, people really don't fuck with me. So he went from being like apologetic once he realized the reunion was gonna make him look bad to coming back around to fuck it, I don't apologize, because he kept getting so much hate. Mm-hmm. And now he's trying to, like, throw all his various cast members under the bus with whatever dirt he has, which is very little. So he's been keeping all the mess going, but it's just been it's been like the second life of the show has been very entertaining. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
I've never seen a show that, like, any reality show where people are that caught up, like, what are they all posting? What are they all doing type shit?
Yeah, because even the first, I mean, I haven't seen the second season, even the first season, which was extraordinarily popular, I don't remember it stretching out this long afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember being this intensely caught up. And I will say, with the first season, I don't think I watched until like all the regular episodes were out, and then I had to wait for the wedding and the reunion. Mm. But I don't remember being this intensely engaged, like, oh my God, when is the reunion dropping? When is the reunion dropping? I need the reunion to hurry up and drop. Nah, it wasn't that. They definitely created a frenzy. I just hope that it doesn't mean that they'll cast for mess moving forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the scary part. Go ahead, Inka.
They did a little preview for the next show that they
love this, Jeffrey. This is right up your alley.
That they're putting together.
So they're doing another show.
Love is Blind. The new show is called Ultimatum.
Right. The producers taped another show around the same time as they did this one. And the press thought it was season 3. They were just trying to, like, catch up with the time they lost, because it's also hosted by Nick and Vanessa, but it's different. So there's 6 couples. Somebody in the couple wants to get engaged. Somebody doesn't. So apparently they're going to switch partners. No, maybe not switch, or they're just going to be with another partner. Maybe not switch.
So I think they have 6 couples, and inside each of the couples, one is ready for marriage and ready to be engaged, and but one is on the fence. And right, they put them all together and swap.
Yeah, it is a swap. They're going
to
swap partners.
At the end of the first week, when they get to know everybody, they pick a person and then they live with that person in a trial marriage for 3 weeks. And they do this a bunch of times. And at the end, it's like, did I find someone new? Is this person really right for me? Do I move on and break up?
So it's going to be a lot. So niggas going to be fucking each other's partners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. My thing is like, I'm like, I don't know how you come back from that. Because if you get back
together,
it'll be a whole lot of.
You're my girl, but you lived with this nigga and let him pound you out for 3 weeks. And now we're supposed to figure out we get married.
And they're all really good looking 20 something looking people.
They're all fucking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be messed. I'm excited.
By the way, Put a Ring On is coming back. I saw the preview for that.
Oh, wow.
So it's mess season. It's mess season.
The one thing with the reunion, I don't know if this was the edits or whatever, but I feel like they did some jumps that were weird. Like maybe it could have been two parts, but it didn't feel.
I feel like it needed to be two parts. Fluid. There were some awkward moments that I think that's kind of what it was. There were a couple of moments where it was like a heavy pause. And it was like, let's figure out where to go. Because we had there's one cast member who just shuts down. Like, literally, if he was a turtle and he had a shell, he would pull himself, like, Shane would pull himself into that bitch if he could. So sometimes when there are a couple of people who just, like, weren't trying to do anything. The guy we were just talking about, he's interrupting everybody all the fucking time. So, like, I think it could have been longer. There were a couple of things they didn't address that I would have liked to see addressed. But for the most part, the Lachey's brought more heat than any. They bring the heat I'm always wanting hosts to bring. Let me put it that way.
Okay. I'm definitely catch up to see the American version. I mean, I'll be too late for the conversations, but I'm going to watch it anyway. I got a quick story that you'll dig. So I went over to my cousin's house in Atlanta on Sunday, just to visit. And my other cousin, her sister, came by and she was looking all kind of like, you know, worn down, a little despondent. I was like, what's going on? She's like, I had to turn in my car today. They have this deal, the special at the car thing. And they gave me this car, but I don't like the color. And we were like, why'd you buy the car then? She was like, well, because she was pressuring me and it was just delayed the last day and blah, blah, blah. I said, we're going back over to the dealer right now. So me and her went back over to the dealer and I was like, hey man, she don't like this color. She ain't getting this car. We need to do, what color you want, named Sherelle? Rel, what color you want? I like gray. I said, open up this gray or this gray. This one, this is the car, this is the color. She's not taking, it's an orange car. We ain't taking an orange car. Got black guy named Kelvin. He's like, she came back home and didn't like it. I said, yeah, she didn't like it, man. We need to. So we got that straight. And she got her gray car yesterday. So peace to Sherelle.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Don't fall for that. It's the last day.
I told her, this is all cap.
Yeah, it's the last day. All right, well, nigga, then I don't know what to tell you.
Bye.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Exactly. Bye. So, yeah, man. Let's talk about, since we're doing our TV run, let's talk about, finish up, talk about Euphoria. It was the season finale last week. Well, Sunday.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ain't watched it by now, it's damn near a week.
Like, whatever, it needs to be the spoiler episode because I can't do like now I did and be like.
No, you don't have to hold back with Euphoria. You don't have to hold back with Euphoria.
Yeah,
I was just doing it with Love is Blind because it just came out.
A week ago, shit, you know, almost. So anyway, so we had the season finale, Euphoria.
I called it.
Oh, with Ashley.
Yeah,
and that broke me down.
That was that. I mean, I have to say, like, just from a technical standpoint, that the way that scene was shot and filmed, and the dialogue, everything about that scene from start to finish,
it was so intense.
Was incredible.
It was so intense. And the way he just kept saying, Ash, come outside. There's a kid in there. There's a little kid in there.
Oh my God. I mean, even from like when he realized that, what's her name? Faye dropped the glass.
Yeah.
And it hits him with the don't talk. And then Ash stabbed.
He's like, Ash, no. Yeah.
And he always says, he said, Ash, no, when he hit mouth with the hammer.
Yeah.
Ash, no.
Yeah.
He was like, what you doing, bro?
Like, fuck.
You had to take it that
far. But that's also why I said, Ash, and I think I said this on the episode, but I've definitely said on Twitter, Ash, I think I did say on last episode, Ash is not a sustainable character from a storytelling point of view. He's too volatile.
He got two bodies.
And he's young.
He's also like not socialized. He's never been to school. He doesn't have like a social
security hang around. Number. Nobody his age. Nothing. So it's like, unless you were going to spin Ash off into this really dark series of his own where we could just watch him kill motherfuckers and be really creepy. Like, as he got older, like right now, Ash is still...
like 12?
His level of darkness fascinates us because he's a kid. Mm-hmm. That shit would get different real quick. You know what I'm saying?
He's, so when he's like, 18, 19, then exactly. he's a serial killer, maniac.
Exactly. And like, he's the big quiet nigga that you can't even look at wrong because you might get shot or killed or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, and he has a hair snap, Ash does. So
and the thing about it, not only does he have a hair snap, but then you can't stop him.
Right.
There's no talking him down. Once he's gone, he's gone. It's he's not gone. Like, all right, I'm a chill. There's no, I'm a chill.
There's no. This is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, go on. So yeah, unfortunately, and I mean, I don't know what it's gonna mean for Fez because like they shot his whole fucking house up
and took him to jail.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
That's
and again, there's two bodies that we know of.
Right.
There's Mouse and there's now.
But now, you know, Homegirl tried to set Lori up on the wire. I don't know if that worked, though.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, but again, but just the technical way that scene was shot with all the gunfire and and Ash in the bathtub, and it was incredible.
I hope Granny didn't catch a stray.
Oh fuck! I forgot she's in the house.
In the bed.
Yeah, she's in the bed.
They shot up the whole thing.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, they shot everything.
Oh my God. What's that? Take care of his grandma.
Yeah, good question. Because I don't know, the cops even knew she was in there.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So and I wonder what happens to Faye because you know they have her cuffed on the ground. You know they're gonna bring her in to talk at some point.
Right.
But it was an intense episode. We got. What's his name? Why am I blank? Nate turning his father in, but well, I didn't understand.
You wondered if Nate was saying his father.
What did they arrest him for?
Oh, because he's on film.
That's a minor
underage kids. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that was.
It wasn't just because she was homegirl wasn't the only one. I don't think. I think he was.
No, that was kind of his thing.
Yeah.
Great writing in this part. Weird for me because it was kind of like, damn, Cal got to finally like live his truth.
Yeah.
And then it got snatched out from him again. As a child by his father, as an adult by his son. Like he was like really living like how he wanted to live. He had the trans people there and the good, and they were having a good time. And now it's like, pow, it's gone again.
And I mean, that's what's hard about Cal. And also what is kind of really well done about Euphoria characters, like when I said before, I watched the after show after every episode, and you know, in that Cal episode, they set it up by showing us Cal in high school, and what the director said at the end was that their hope was, like, they were like, if you came out of this episode with even just like the slightest bit of empathy for Cal, like if you were rooting for Cal just a little bit, we did our job. And I was kind of like, oh fuck, you know.
Yeah.
He got a wrong deal. But he's also a piece of shit, right? So there's also like that still is the truth. So part of me is like you, Jeffrey, like, damn, he finally got to be who he is. But the other part is like, yeah, but he was definitely fucking minors, right? So the fucking them is bad enough. Videotaping with
filming them,
knowledge, filming them. And consent, right?
Yeah.
That's really that even if you want to argue like they consented, he was videotaping without their knowledge and consent. And so for that, I'm like, he gotta get got. But Nate turned him in because Nate is jealous. Like, Nate's mad because his father left and his life is still fucked up.
Right? Why did Nate get the gun, though? I didn't understand what he was. What was the gun for?
Oh, I don't know. I think the threat.
Maybe just to,
because maybe he thought he and his father were going to have to go to Tuck. Because he's used to a very angry version of his father. Maybe he thought he was going to have to threaten him, some shit like that. But like Nate turned him in out of jealousy. Nate turned him in because like the morning after he left, his mother was still like, don't be angry at me now. No, you still got problems. You know, him and Cassie are still fucked up. You know what I mean? So Nate's mad, like, you left. You were supposed to be the problem. It turns out you're not the problem. I'm mad about that, so I'm gonna turn you the fuck in, you know. So all of that is really complex in terms of feeling about it. There, you know, I wasn't cheering for either side with that, you know.
Yeah. And then we had obviously the end of the play. The play becomes this chaotic thing. The mom, Suze runs up on stage.
Cassie runs up on stage first. Then Maddie runs up on stage. Then Sue runs up on stage. Like, it's all madness.
It's a mess. And then Sue's
Maddie
like,
said, oh no, that mess needs to be
damn. Word. And then Sue's just like, this is all part of the play.
Right. Sue trying to play it off.
And it was, but again, it's just so weird. I mean, it's like nitpicky, but it's like, there were literally no teachers there. There were no teachers there.
No,
like,
administration.
A whole auditorium, a play. There was not one
security
faculty member. Nothing.
Shout out to Bobby, the stage manager, for getting like back out there and keeping it all together.
I love Bobby. I want
to shout out to Rue for starting the Lexi chants, letting her know that people were waiting for her. And like, I think there was like a redemption arc there. Like, we used to be best friends, and I forgot about that.
I'm gonna hold you down.
The play. And it's my turn to kind of hold you now. So I really enjoyed that moment. So I also love that she paid Jules's apology dust.
Yeah, like, whatever.
Just like, this is over for me. Yeah. I think they realized that they're bad for each other.
Yeah. They're very bad for each other, yeah.
And then I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory I was looking at on TikTok, which low-key makes sense to me.
Okay.
And that is that Elliot is not a real character. Elliot is the personification of Rue's addiction.
No, people have seen Elliot. Elliot got beat up at school.
Right, but the people mom doesn't acknowledge Elliot at all.
But Jules,
when Jules finally gets entangled with Elliot, she kind of likes it, but then she pulls back right away.
But we see Elliot has a sibling that we've seen, and we've seen Elliot.
Who beat up Elliot?
With the guitar singing.
He was getting
Who beat him up at school?
I don't know. Some people were harassing him at school, and that's when Rue was like, "Oh, I forgot Elliot goes to school with me."
Oh,
okay. Still could be.
No,
I kind of see Elliot, it. Like, if you, I'm maybe that's just what he represents. Maybe he is.
No,
real,
I think Elliot's real. Because they would have said it in the, at some point. They would have said it in the after show. They are saying Elliot's a real character.
True.
Elliot's an actual character. Because they talk about him as the
after show. But like, yeah. I thought it was interesting.
I saw that theory, and then people were like, yeah, but nah, he got it, like on some Sixth Sense shit. But people were like, yeah, nah, he got beat up. That's cool. And and I was like, oh yeah, that's right. So because people like nobody ever acknowledges him but Rue and Jules. And they're like, no, he definitely got fucked up at school, and he had a sister or something like that.
I remember his sister.
Yeah. So, but I also think, again, they would have said that at some point in the after show.
What did y'all think about first of all, and it's been mentioned 1,000 times, but like, I didn't like the fact that the Laurie storyline just disappeared for the last 3 episodes. It's like,
but I also think that it's good that we have something for season 3 to be. Because if that had been tied up, or if they found a way to pay Laurie in the last episode,
everything was pretty much tied up.
Everything starts over, right? Yeah. So we needed a tag.
And I mean, she did get a mention. I mean, here's the thing: the story is still about Rue's journey, right? So if we get too derailed with Rue looking over her shoulder for Laurie every couple minutes, it becomes a different story. It's still about Rue. She got to go to high school. She got to navigate the relationships with her friends. Like, the Laurie thing is very, very major, and she's going to, you know, we keep it in the back of our mind. It's going to come back. But it's also the fact that, you know, we had an episode where her mom is crying because she's like, my daughter's going to end up killing herself, and she's still not in a treatment center either. So there's a lot of stuff that's hanging, right?
But she did say in the voiceover that the rest of the school year kind of went off uneventfully. She stayed clean.
Right,
for the rest of the school year, but
rest of the school year, yeah.
Yeah,
but who knows what time is in East Highland?
The time is not linear.
I think even between first and second season was supposed to be one school year or some shit.
It picks up not too long after
the holiday break or some shit. Yeah. It's like before.
So what did y'all think about the way they ended the season?
I actually wasn't sure for a second if it was a series finale. It felt very final.
It felt like a series finale to me.
It felt very final, but then, so then even when I was watching the after show, it kind of felt very final until there's a scene where Sam Levinson says, you know, we hope everybody feels like they're excited to see what's next for these kids, you know, for these characters. And I was like, oh, okay, you are coming back. Because I wasn't really sure, because this shit feels very...
Yeah.
It's not going back till 2024, though.
Oh, that's God right. damn.
Yeah.
They made it way ahead.
Yeah, because Zendaya is so busy, like, with right. the, you know, film.
So by the time they come back, they may be way ahead in time. Yeah.
And also, and somebody made a good point, it's like, none of them are teenagers now. So, like, in two more years, like, they're going to be 28 and 27.
They will have been, in 2 years, they're not supposed to be in high school anymore anyway, so the story is going to change.
No, well, 2 years real, but in show terms, it could be 1 year, which you mean, because Rue will be a senior, Jules will be a senior, I think Maddie will...
I feel like they'll skip him ahead, because if Rue already talked about the rest of the school year and whatever, I feel like they're going to skip him ahead a little bit. That would make sense to
but
me.
But to be what, in college?
Or not. I don't think Rue's going to college, or just...
Rue can't go to college. I know them grades is looking wild. There's no way.
Here's the thing about Euphoria. On some level, if Rue is ever not struggling with her addiction, there's no point in the show, right? So, which sounds morbid to say, but that's the fact. So, wherever they skip ahead to, it's not going to be college, because Rue's not going to be functional, but I'm guessing we're going to find her back in some level of... If not in treatment, if not in her steps, maybe back using, maybe just out of treatment, something. But her,
you know,
her addiction and recovery have to stay central to the show, or there's no point in the show.
They also might do what they did last time, which is do those little mini episodes with maybe in a between, couple of yeah. different characters, like to kind of advance the plot line that way, since they can't do, you know, season. They might maybe we'll get a Jules. I mean, we've got a Jules one. Maybe we'll get a Maddie one. Maybe we'll get a, you know.
The sister.
An Elliot one or Lexi one, yeah, who knows, you know. But bro, you been watching the Kanye thing? Nah.
He said no. He's
muted. Nah, I'm good. I have not. I have not watched a second of it. I'm not interested in it at all. Fuck him. I mean, and I say this, I tweeted this earlier, I say this with no judgment, because everyone's line is different. But he just put himself in a space where I could just never feel good about supporting anything that impacts his bottom line and highlights his voice. I'm good. So good.
You know what's interesting about what you're saying is the third episode, which we're about to talk about, kind of highlights that. The third episode is obviously him kind of, as of today, to a point. Obviously, it doesn't get into the Kim Kardashian stuff, but like the running for president, the manic episodes, the, you know.
But I think, but I guess my issue here, and I know you guys are going to talk about this stuff in depth, but I think my issue here is like, this all felt like a ploy to claw back some of the real estate with Black folks that he lost.
Okay, so I can speak to that. Kanye's voice is not in this doc. That, and I think that's the thing that was the differentiating factor for me. It is Kanye's footage, but it is Cootie and TK.
It's more like a Cootie episode. Really.
Yeah, so it parallels Cootie's career with his, like Cootie's life with his, really. Even the years that they're apart, Cootie was talking about what he was doing, his daughter, you know, all this other shit.
Yeah, daughter being born.
So, His daughter Ivy.
He had a baby that was born 2 months prematurely who named her Ivy, which I thought was lovely.
This feels more like your boy, y'all are catching up, and you're like, yo, what was the story like? What was the story with you and old boy? And he's like, yo, so, you know, when I was working at the blah, 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 I met him, we were doing XYZ. Then I ain't talked to him for a long time, and I was over here doing, like, it really feels like that kind of a story. And what Cootie does is really well, because y'all know, look, be clear, y'all know I have nothing for Kanye. From a storytelling perspective, though, I found this trilogy fascinating, just in terms of how they framed it, the footage, because... Cootie sets it up by starting with, he used to host a show called Channel Zero in Chicago, which is like the old Music Box in New York. So he starts it by framing it about the Chicago hip hop scene his career and where Kanye fit. It's always about kind of where Kanye fit in the narrative of hip hop at a bigger thing. Now, the last episode is a little different because I did a Clubhouse talk with him and Chike yesterday. And I even asked him, like, was there something that you wanted? What did you want the audience to walk away from that? Because what it seems to be is he's presenting you with some things, but meaning Cootie, but he's not, because I'm fairly certain that Kanye was not okay with the edit of the third episode. Because he was complaining about not being able to edit the doc or not having final approval over the edit of the doc. And I'm almost 100% sure that the third one was the one he meant specifically. Because Cootie caught him having a breakdown. And he said, because he's always a first person narration. So there's a point where he's like, I had never caught the side of him. I had never seen the side of him. I didn't know. Because he actually said, he was like, I knew Kanye. I had never met Yeezy, you know. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I didn't know the side of him. He was like, I felt like I had to turn the camera off. So he turns the camera off, you know, like that type of thing. And there's a couple of those moments. There's one moment where, you know, Cootie is almost like in tears because he's really concerned mm-hmm. about his friend and about his friend's well-being. And there's a moment like we're in the car and Kanye, you hear that Kanye is listening to somebody talk about his presidential campaign and things that he's saying.
Tucker Carlson.
Well, I was going to say, you don't know who it is right away. Mm. And then somebody's like, who is that? Who are you listening to? And then it zooms in and you see that it's like Tucker Carlson. And the guy's, and he's like, no, he's taking your words out of context. And Kanye's like, no, he's putting them in context, bro. He's putting them in context. He figured it out. He understands. So he's presenting us this shit and he's not giving us a definitive thought on it. It's more like, I'm going to give this to you and you like figure it out. But there is at the end moment, and it, because there's not a real firm ending because it went up to such recent time that it was kind of like the, all right, I had to kind of recognize that like all these parts of Kanye are Kanye, right? And that I get, because that same passion, and I've been kind of saying this, that same passion that had Kanye blurting out George Bush doesn't like black people is the same thing that had him bum rush the stage with Taylor Swift. The same thing that had Kanye, you know, going to people and ranting about how dope he was, how great his album was, that they couldn't see his vision, that he was going to change rap. It's the same thing that he's thinking when he's talking about how he's going to change the world and do whatever. It's just his perspective has shifted and the people around him have shifted, you know. But that the same thing that made people like Kanye in the beginning is the same shit that made people not like Kanye now. It just manifests differently, if that makes sense. Mm. But never. It's not a pro Kanye. Like, this is very much like you're observing Kanye. Kanye's voice ain't in this. You're observing
I even though I have not watched it, I would disagree in that while I understand your point of view that his voice, like, he is not personally sort of stamping his hand on this. Like, I do think that it is an attempt to sort of gain some level of empathy for him and gain some level of, and I'm using air quotes here, insight into him. And I mean, that's, I'm not saying that with any judgment to the filmmaker, right? Like, he had this amazing vault of footage that he decided to do something with. And that's whatever. I'm not, again, I say this with no judgment, but it did not, the fact that none of those things are apparent in this situation, like there is no challenge, there is no, hey, these are the sort of things that may have taken place outside of this purview. Like, to me, just sort of reiterates that this was an attempt for some level of, yo, he's not really that bad. You know, he's got this way about him. And again, that's fine. People explain shit about their friends all the time. I'm, you know, God bless, you know, go forth and prosper. I, you know, I don't have any, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not, this isn't keeping me up at night type of thing, okay, but like, yeah.
I just think that even Jay himself is not completely okay with it, because Kanye is not promoting this shit. Like, he's not
because it's too much truth. It's too much.
Right.
Yeah, he wouldn't be okay with it because of multiple, you know what I'm saying? Because of all we know about him now, right?
Yeah.
Because he would never have any of those things out there, and he would never have anything to make it seem like he wasn't. Because that's a part of his narrative has been, like, that struggle initially wasn't really a part of his narrative. It was like they fucked with me because I'm dope.
Uh-huh.
And you know, and I like, so that struggle that Jeff even talked about sort of in that first run when they was like, yeah, nigga, where your beats? We don't really give a shit about. That wasn't right. a part of his that wasn't a part of his story. That was not a part of his hip hop story. The hip hop story was Jay didn't see it, Dame saw it and thought he was the greatest shit ever, and that's how we got Kanye. Unless I'm mistaken.
I just always knew he had to convince The Rock, but now what's interesting is that in real life is like Dame was the holdout. That's what's actually interesting.
Yeah, but initially with the whole right. chain ceremony and all yeah, yeah. of that, the way it was sold was that this is the new golden boy that's yeah. going to take us into the next phase of Rockefeller, because they all were street artists ultimately. Like outside of yeah. Jay, them niggas were regional by and large. Yeah, they were not popping, you know, west of the Mississippi.
No.
Right, so, right. you know, and again, God bless. I think this really did show a level of importance for capturing footage and giving it time mm-hmm. and not like making a documentary about some shit that happened last summer.
And that was part of it for me.
My thing is like, I looked at it also as, and I mean, the more extreme version would be if we had all this footage like of Michael, but it's almost like this guy wanted this fame. He wanted it badly. And we saw signs early, even back at episode 2 when we talked about last week, when he told Cootie, can't shoot Jesus Walks, man. I got to get the hype. Like he had this vision in his mind of what he wanted to be, the most famous artist, the biggest artist in the world. And to some extent, he achieved that. But we saw, this, especially this episode, showed us what the effects of that are.
Right.
Like you're totally disassociated from reality. You cut everybody.
And they seeded that, not to cut you off, but they seeded that.
Mm-hmm. Early, that's what I'm saying, early on.
In the first episode, Dr. West was like, you can be a giant, but you still got to be able to stay on Earth. Yeah, yeah, Pharrell was like, listen, you got to stay grounded. Like, everybody along the way was like, you got to stay grounded. You got to stay grounded. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But he never said, he didn't stay grounded. He disassociated himself from pretty much everybody who started with him. And he was like, well, now I'm this guy. So these are the things that I have to do as this guy. And they said something in the doc. I can't remember the exact quote. It was like, he said he was playing a character.
Yeah, he was like, Kanye doesn't exist. He was like, I'm playing a character. That's
character
what he wanted
now.
To stop taping or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's what he did. But he did it to the nth degree. And we saw that disassociation from reality, what that did to his, you know, to his mental state. Like, nobody checked him. Nobody said, you bugging, nigga. Nobody said, what the fuck are you talking about, nigga? Nobody said that around him. So he was able to just, he does not constantly spout right. off these foolish things. Even everything now is happening with Kim, is because nobody's saying, nigga, what the fuck are you doing?
And when the people who are his attorneys are firing them.
Yeah, exactly. Or the friends I'm sure the friends that did that, like John and some others, are no longer in the circle. Now you're out of here.
One of the things I said to y'all on text that was most striking to me, this last episode, it opened with a conversation about, you know, his ego and whether or not he can really, you know, demand that people call him like brilliant or a genius or whatever. And Rhymefest kind of being like, nigga, get over yourself. Like, you know, that's a recurring thing too. Like they show Oprah saying, I heard you're really arrogant. I heard you're very arrogant. Like, you know, that comes up a lot. And, but what's interesting about it is like, it really did feel like, you know, when Cootie's coming back into his life and he's saying it, he does actually say it kind of deliberately, but he's very careful in the way that that he says it. It's like, you know, I didn't know the people. I didn't know these people that was around.
Who are these niggas?
And like, it's really
who are these niggas?
But Kanye's voice is completely different. Like literally
different.
His voice, his speaking mm-hmm. voice, his tone from all the footage. We got 20 years of footage and we get to the last 5 fucking years and it's a whole different nigga. This nigga sounds like a Kardashian. And I was like, that shit had to be so jarring to hear, you know what I'm saying? Like as somebody's friend to really be like, Yo, what the?
But I gotta say something about Cootie too, and I know Cootie a little bit. He's a really nice guy.
He be on
really
some artist shit too.
Yeah, no, not just that, but I mean, I really like Cootie. Like the few times I've met him, we've had good conversation. Really, really good dude. But Cootie got caught in that shit too, because when he came back, I forget what they did. I think they did the thing. He was supposed to go on tour with Kanye. They didn't take him on tour.
Right? Oh yeah, with the Glow in the Dark tour.
Glow in the Dark tour. Like at the last minute, he's like, "There's no room for you, nigga." It's a multi-million-dollar tour. What's one more person gonna do? It's nothing. Share room with somebody. Like that was purposely done. The footage of Kanye calling him TK at the Grammy party multiple times. The first time I think was a mistake. After that, he was disrespectful. It was disrespectful. Yeah. And then when he went into like, "Yo, fuck you, nah, fuck you," it's like, "Nah, nigga, you're not really joking." Because like, nigga, I would never like say, "Yo, bro, fuck you." Like I wouldn't do that unless we planned a fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a joke.
Right. So
it's like,
right.
It's like, I don't know what, I don't know if it was an animosity thing for Kanye or something, but like, you could see Cootie being like.
Cootie said he definitely felt a way about that.
You could see it in his face. He was like, "Yeah, what the fuck is he doing?"
Yeah.
And so, but it felt like Cootie kept trying to figure out a way to get back. You know, he kept trying to figure out a way to get back. And you know, it paid off with this documentary footage and stuff, which is amazing, but. It was almost like he got caught in that Kanye whirlwind too, where like, I'm just gonna ride this wave, you know, late under the guise of I'm looking out for my brother. You know what I'm saying? And maybe somewhat he was, but somewhat it was just like, I wanna be around. I wanna be in Wyoming. I wanna be around. I wanna film him and Justin Bieber. I wanna film him and Dame. I wanna film him and Dave Chappelle. I want, you know, because it's beneficial to him as well. But he got caught up in that, and Kanye is at the space, I think, where he knows these niggas just in it for what they can get out of it. So he clowns niggas. And nobody checks him. Even the Rick Rubin shit was weird. Like, I don't say exciting anymore.
The Rick Rubin shit was so weird. And when Rick was like, "Yeah, I'm going to come back home to my family." And Kanye's like, "No, I think you should come to the ranch." And
Rick's like, I would have been like, "No, nigga, I'm not coming out the fucking Wyoming."
And Rick's like, "Really?" And then Kanye's like, "I mean, no pressure." You know what I mean? Like, it's so, yeah.
It was like, let me see if I get this. I would have been like, "Nah, bro, I'm not. I'm going to come out there, like Rick said, for the day, and I'm going back home. I'm not staying out there the 2 or 3 days to fuck around with y'all." Like, you know.
But you could talk about some fucking ranting shit.
Ranting and shit nonstop. So, I mean, this definitely, like, shed a light on, you know, the person who he is now, which was not appealing at all. And, you know,
And that's the other thing, like, to go back to what Sean, sorry to cut you off, Jeff, but to go back to what Sean was talking about, and I get it. I watched this. This has not changed my opinion of Kanye a single bit.
Think it changed anybody's opinion one way or the other.
But I was able, but what was interesting to me, like I said before, was the framing of it now, you know, 20 years later, really looking at the art. Especially that first episode. I found the first episode really fascinating. And even the fact that, like, the cultural touchstones, like, they're playing pool at one point. You mentioned this, the R. Kelly interview while they're playing pool. Like, I was just like, how did you, he was like, "Yo, I didn't even know I caught that." Because I was asking him, Cootie, about how many surprises he found when he went back, you know, going through the footage. And so anyway, with this last ep, it's not flattering. And there is an angle of kind of, is it the grief? Because he does set that up. Like, he never stopped working after his mom died. You know, he just would not stop. And he was just going, didn't pause, didn't take a breath to really process. So it's kind of like, so he kind of offers, like, maybe it's grief. He does not, I think, put too much of it on Kanye living with bipolar. It's so much, it just makes it known that this is a thing that Kanye has and that maybe Kanye is a little resistant about.
I think he did though when he, because we've never, I don't know how much footage is out, but I don't think we've seen Kanye, well, we suspect, but that episode with him talking to the white men about the island, that was like full blown manic, bipolar, wilding. The white men were like, "What's really good with you?"
Right. And that was where he said he needed to turn his camera off. You know what I'm saying? Because he was like, "I had never seen that and I had never captured that." And I was also kind of surprised that he put it in, because I think he wanted to show that it's a thing.
But you know, not to cut you off, but you know what's interesting to me, and I don't, again, I'm not a doctor, I don't know shit, but we didn't see any of that when he was young. It was it's almost like the bipolar thing happened.
It can get worse as you get older, and sometimes it doesn't.
It can be triggered by a really traumatic event,
like his mom dying or something like
that. Yeah, and sometimes your mania and depressive episodes can last for years at a time. Like, it's not necessarily sustainable for.
Or their swings are wider. So maybe his swings are just wider. People say bipolar a lot, but to clarify, bipolar is. The symptoms, bipolar is defined by you have these moments of you're either, they're extreme. So you're either high, which is the manic point, which looks like frenzy, which looks like a lot of energy, which looks like the Kanye rants, the Kanye tweet rants, the, you know, really
feeling very ethereal and like one with the universe is what
I'm thinking. Because you feel like you're indestructible. Yeah, that word. Like you're kind of like superhero god shit,
or invincible or whatever.
Invincible. That's what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Or really low lows. So a lot of people say with real depressive lows. So a lot of people say bipolar as like a reference for moodiness, but it's not that. They're complete extremes. It's mountain peak valley, right? And Kanye has said before he doesn't like being medicated because he feels like it takes away his creative energy, which is the manic part. And a lot of people who live with bipolar who are creative say like when they're manic, they're very productive and ideas flow and all this other stuff. But also when they're manic, their sense of judgment is off. And your sense of perception is off. And you're not really seeing things clearly in terms of how they are, in terms of how people are responding to you, in terms of what is happening. You're not able to get a really clear read on other people's actions, reactions, etc. So it's that struggle between the fact that like your output is great, but like you don't really have a grasp on reality. Mm-hmm. So Inka said, sometimes it doesn't present until later. Or you can have had it, but it gets more extreme later. Because Kanye definitely, like I said, I told you, I already think Kanye had ADHD, which in and of itself has a bit of mania to it, especially if you aren't treating it. But like, it definitely got more extreme as he got older. And part of that could have just been like him not, you know, him having trauma and not coping with it and not really knowing how to handle it, this pressure. As his career grew, because one thing that I thought was curious, was interesting that Cootie put in, was like the bigger Kanye got, the more he wanted Dr. West around, you know?
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting that he had showed, like, I don't know what his relationship with his father is, but it ain't great, because when he was on the phone with his father in the car, and, you know, he's like, you know, how you doing, Kanye? I was, you know, Kanye's asking me, doing, he said, I'm just worried about you. And Kanye almost like scoffs at him, like, pfft. Like, I'm like, whatever, nigga. And then he's like, you know, just write down your words next time. Write down your speech. Because that was a speech where he said, told that my father wanted my mother to abort me. And then his father's like, you know, fam, like what are we doing? Why'd you have to say that publicly on CNN or whatever the fuck you were? But I don't know. Inka, what'd you think about it? I'll let you jump in a little bit.
It was interesting to watch. Like I said, I enjoyed the way that Cootie paralleled the life of his daughter with the time he spent away from Kanye, just like using it as a marker. I liked his storytelling, but I honestly think he is kind of a yes man around him. Like, how that's do you
a,
hear
that was my point that was
in
my
a point. Meeting or overhear a conversation that's like, I want to move forward on this documentary and also everything I need to run for president. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm your homie and I come out to wherever they were, Dominican Republic,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I hear that. I'm like, hey, nigga, let's step aside.
Let me reevaluate a bit.
How's North doing? Where, you know, have you eaten
also,
today?
Like, I think that's also the challenge of, like, I'm sorry to cut you off. I think that's because I want to ask you what you think about this. Is that also the challenge of like, am I the filmmaker or am I the friend? Right? Because part of this is him wanting to not, And I kind of get this. Part of this is him wanting to not interrupt the normal flow of whatever Kanye would be doing so that he can capture the most honest, whatever. If you're trying to capture Kanye, all his Kanye-ness.
Why did he invite why did he invite Cootie to the Dominican Republic in the first place? Was it to tie up the ends on this documentary? Like, did we assume that he would be filming? Because I thought it was, you know, let me run what I have so far by you, not like, let's continue filming. Because at that point, like, we're not friends. I haven't seen you in like 7 years or whatever he said. I'm capturing all this shit on video if that's the case. But if you're framing it in a friendship way, where that bullshit, like, I'm gonna come to Wyoming and shake your hand. No, I'm gonna come here and say, hey, nigga, take your meds and go see your kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, fuck this documentary and all this other shit. Like, you seem destroyed.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem like the person that I know. So maybe not run for president and let's get home.
But to your point, they didn't have a relationship anymore.
Right. So then just keep the camera rolling.
Yeah.
If that's it. I mean, that's very a black and white way to kind of think about it. But, you know, either you have all this love for this person and you can be in contact with them and you're rooting for them, or not. It's weird to kind of ride that fence. And I think that's what made the last part really choppy. And like, I kind of disliked it.
I didn't love it. It wasn't as cohesive as the other two. And you could tell that, because I will say this, I feel like Cootie wanted to protect his friend, right? Obviously. And Cootie is also a very spiritual person. TK is too. They both are. So I feel like Cootie definitely wanted to protect his friend.
Nothing against the guy. Like, I don't know him. Obviously,
I know.
Like, from outside looking in, I was like, what is happening?
No, I'm just speaking to the choppiness because I know that too. I feel like Cootie wanted to protect his friend, but wanted to present the truth. And that became, and I think I said that when we first started talking about that, that becomes harder to do when you get into present day. And by protect, I don't mean guard him from any criticism, but I mean like not do anything that Cootie would think feels exploitive, right? So that's a very subjective thing. But I think that's what we saw the struggle in, because also, like I said, there's no endpoint. You can't put a period on this because it comes into present day. So that also makes it hard. Like, you're not really leaving on anything finite. You're not coming to an end conclusion to bring this arc to a close. This is kind of like a to be continued, which I think is also a really hard point from storytelling. So yeah, I agree. The third part is not as tight as the other two because
there's a lot of filler in the third part.
Yeah.
A lot of filler, like a lot of just stock footage and stock interviews of him tripping. Not the one-on-one footage that Cootie has in the front, and Cheeky,
because he wasn't around.
Because he wasn't around for years. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if I duck out or I get kind of get kicked out, I guess really in like 2013, I guess it was, probably, and then I show back up in 2020, then I don't know you anymore. I've seen stuff on TV, but I don't know. You definitely don't know me.
Right.
But also, maybe the last part, because there was so much footage and so many things they were trying to connect, could have been four parts. You know, not the last part being four parts, but this could have been like four instead of three, and kind of gave us a little bit more in those absent years, maybe, or I don't know.
I would have I would have liked to see at least one scene with Cootie and Rhymefest. And, you know, maybe J.I.V. talking about what the fuck was happening. Just them three. Like, yo, what's up with your man, bro?
But see, that would have been
absolutely drinking the Kool-Aid, too. Rhymefest is not an impartial person in this. Like, he is absolutely complicit in all this bullshit going on.
Me and Rhymefest had a huge argument about Kanye. It was a good one, but, like, when I was writing about Kanye doing Sunday service, I talked to him and we had a whole debate. Cause I was like, bro, ain't you calling him on the carpet your damn self? And he was like, yes. But then he came and sat at my kitchen table. And that's all I wanted was him to come and say, I was like, okay. But anyway.
So you want it back in, basically.
And in the Sunday service shit, like, while I do, you know, it's cool, get back to your spirituality, blah, blah, blah. But let's not pretend that this isn't like a
marketing
starting
plan.
A church to get a tax shelter.
Okay, so to that
get
point,
you out of hundreds of millions of dollars.
To go back to what Sean was saying, that when Kanye was doing Sunday service and he himself was, you know, trying to fucking evangelize and do everything, I was 100% like, this is him trying to be on a redemptive arc until he started talking shit about Black people. And he was hanging out with the white evangelicals. And I was like, all right, whatever.
Hillsong crowd.
He's on his own shit. But with this, like I said before, I'm not going to say that Kudi and Chike don't want, I think there's two things. I think first, they've been sitting on this footage for 20 years. This footage for a fucking goldmine, right? Like, this footage is fucking incredible.
Hundreds of multi-hour tapes.
Right. So insane. I think that one thing is like, we got to do something with this shit. So I think there's that part. And also like, we got to do something with this shit while it's still, before it gets too much further away. Like 20 years is a good mark, right? And I do think that the other thing is like, people don't understand him and we want to try to provide that, but Kudi don't understand him either. And that was the one thing, Kudi and Chike don't want to say, this is what's wrong with Kanye, this is what's not wrong with Kanye, because they don't fucking know. They don't know.
They don't be around him.
And I think that's what was the hard part about part three is like, you're not going to get that conversation. You're not going to get, they were not going to add any context about what they think is going on with Kanye, just observations. And that's what makes it a little trickier, because the first two parts aren't really like that. You got a lot of people saying, he's a genius, he's next, he's this, he's that, he's great, he's here, he's there, da. And then the third is more like, let me step away and just show you this shit. And like, I ain't saying, but I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? It's different in format. But it is not a story I envy having to try to put together and get to that part. Like, that had to be so hard, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Bro, you been keeping up with the war?
Have you been keeping up with the war?
No, I'm saying that because you can see there's a lot of people that are basically ignoring what's going on.
It's well, like, I would not say that I'm ignoring what is going on, but I do have to take the information in.
Yeah.
Almost like every couple of days. Like, if you try to monitor that shit like on a like almost an hour by hour, a couple times a day basis, you will just be overwhelmed with information and information that you kind of have to make sense of, because you will get conflicting reports. There's no, there's pretty much not a consensus as to what's happening. We've heard reports of fucking, you know, Russian soldiers, you know, basically running out of food and gas, right?
Because they didn't anticipate being
there, or like these Russian soldiers, you know, us having this idea that these are like these really hardcore badass, because again, America's, you know, we love movies, and in the movies they are always these hardcore badasses, and not a 19-year-old who has been, you know, basically forced to go into armed services, right? Like, this isn't the same thing. So I do keep up. I do try to, you know, maybe I'll go in maybe twice a week and just kind of like read up on some things. But yeah, that's not a daily thing for me. I cannot do it daily. Absolutely not.
No, I understand.
God bless those folks.
I'm the same way. I watch, you know, at this point, I can't watch any news on the regular. I can't even watch New York One on the regular because the city is in chaos. You know, like, subway.
Yeah, I'm definitely having to put myself on like a news, like the news version of a meal plan. Like, I can't.
Yeah, it's too much.
Because like, we're not meant to process this much information in real time.
And it's especially all bad.
Especially this much bad shit.
Exactly. Yeah. Like the subway, there's a guy here in New York City, for those who don't know, I can't remember his name. He had a bag of shit, literally. And he hit this lady over the head with a bag of shit. They arrested.
Good Lord.
Yeah. It's on 41st Street up in the Bronx. So on video and everything, they caught the guy, right? But again, now because of the bail reform thing, he got right out. So I guess he's gonna have to go back to court at some point. But he got right out, and what does he do? He goes on Facebook talking shit. Yo, nobody can stop me. And
I may never go back on the train again.
He's obviously clearly
there's no redeeming that like that. That person needs to be locked away. Like, I know we're all abolitionists and prison is bad, blah, blah, blah. Rikers Island, shut it down, all that. But that nigga needs to go away somewhere, because that lady was sitting down, minding her business.
Minding her business.
And bless that lady. Violently yeah, hit her and smeared that over her. Like that was.
And God bless her. Like the trauma, the years of therapy she'll need to just be able to live.
How's she supposed to leave the house again?
That's what I'm saying.
Come on.
You want her to get on the train to go to work?
I think that, you know, watching or hearing about a guy like that sort of being basically released immediately is like, I know that I kind of have to question, like, I don't think that this is what people who wanted bail reform wanted. Yeah. And there needs to be, the problem with this is that there's very little judgment being used. And
black and white.
Well, that's the law. Right. Mm-hmm. You don't get to use your judgment in the spirit of the law. You have to use your judgment in the letter of the law, particularly in these criminal cases. So if he's eligible for this under this specific law, then he is well within his rights to do that. Yep. And this is going to be and has been a problem and a concern. But, you know, the moment you say anything anti-crime, you turn into, you know, you're painted as like this white conservative who don't give a shit about nobody and you want to mm-hmm. see everybody do 25 years. No, I want to see the guy who decided that he was going to shit in a bag, okay, and wipe it on a woman who was literally doing nothing. And matter of fact, even if she was doing something, I think it's fair that anyone that would wipe shit on someone.
The depravity to shit in a bag in the first place as well.
Like, what the fuck are we talking about right now?
Yeah. And you let this nigga out. Like, and he's like literally right now he's on the street.
And I think that they're doing that. And I think that the issue is I do think that there's some level of judgment and there is some level of wiggle room. And I think that they're doing shit like this specifically and on purpose because they want to show the flaw in that bail reform shit. And they want to go to the other extreme. My point is, it's like there's never any middle ground. The moment you say something or the moment you do something, you're either one side or the other. And it's like, yo, I cannot want to see people get, you know, 3 years in solitary confinement for a fucking backpack and mm-hmm. also not want the guy who's wiping shit on people wandering the streets of New York.
Yeah, yeah. And there's another guy who hit a woman in the head with a hammer, like, within the last week or so. Like, it's like the New York shit.
And
is
I
just
do want to say,
man.
I do want to reiterate too that a lot of these random acts of violence are very rarely, if ever, perpetrated against men, and particularly a certain kind of man.
That's
and
true.
I mean, an able-bodied young man. Like, he didn't wipe that. If that was you or me sitting on that subway platform,
he wouldn't have did that shit.
I can almost guarantee you that he would not have wiped that shit on us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I promise you that guy with the hammer, he might have thought about it, but he might have said, "Oh yeah, nigga, if I miss,
it's on.
It's gonna be a problem.
Yeah.
Ain't gonna be no easy win.
Yep.
Right. And so."
Yep.
You're seeing these attacks and you're seeing this violence and you're seeing all of this shit. It is not as random to me, because if it was random, then there would be people like us
being
a part of those random acts.
That's true. Yeah, it's always, sadly, it's always women and, you know, a black woman, an Asian woman, just minding their business.
Or like an elderly person. Or someone who can't really defend it or doesn't present as someone who can defend themselves.
Exactly. Elderly man or woman walking down the street and then motherfucker run up behind him and punch him in the... It's New York City is bonkers, man. You know, it's getting worse.
Have you been keeping up with the war is a wild question, though. I really enjoyed that. Thank you.
You're welcome. the war is a little scary to me.
I do want to say this, though. My wife's crush is over there, was over there in the Ukraine. And buddy, when I tell you she went full Brian Williams,
I got Ted to find Cobble, out.
This nigga was on Google like a motherfucker. She knew all this. I read the New York Times today. It's like 135 people got killed.
You know what I'm saying? You want to know everything. Where is he stationed right now? this was obviously it's very scary, but it's scary because Putin, it's not working the way Putin thought. I mean, Russia will end up probably overtaken because it's just a more powerful country. But they thought it was going to, I read somewhere where they thought it was going to be like 2 days. And the fact that it's gone over a week now and they've suffered some casualties as well. And so a lot of things happened on to the Russians that they weren't expecting and weren't prepared for is making Putin get desperate and escalate his attacks. And what's scary about that is, you know, the Ukrainian people seem to be a tough people. And, you know, they're fighting back and they're taking some heads out with them. So
lot of the civilians have remained in place.
Yes.
Even those in the capital city are like, nah, fuck that, we're not leaving. So yep,
they're beating them back from these cities. Like, there's
because you know you can't negotiate with a guy like that.
Nope.
You know if you give him just a slither of access to that country, in another 5 years, he's coming for some more. And yep. He's coming for some more. And then when you look up, it's going to be, you know, 15 years have passed. And now your country is a third of its size.
Yep. And you guys are, you know, it's basically almost like, you know, the Holocaust. You guys are like shoved into like certain places where you can't go here, you can't go there without checkpoints and blah, blah, blah. So he's ramping it up because he's not winning as easy as he thought. And that's very nervous to me because it's like, what else will he do to win? Because now he's looking like a sucker. Like, oh, you thought it was going to be easy, but you getting your head kind of beat in too. So like, what desperation will you go to win this piece of what your plan is? So it's very scary. And you know, I guess NATO's going to get involved soon and it could really escalate. So, you know, prayers up for everybody, even though the Ukrainians, you know, shitting on black people and all that. I just don't want to see this thing turn more nasty. I was going to talk about Prince, but we kind of ran late on time. We'll save that for another time. Prince was a dick. I love him. One of my favorite artists. One of my favorite top three, maybe top seven, top five.
I think him being a dick is part of the Prince mythology, though.
I don't think it's mythology. It's proven that he's.
I mean, you know what I mean. It's part of the.
I feel like
everybody he worked with. He shitted on him.
What I'm saying is, I don't think that's like a shocking new discovery.
I think it is though. I think it's shocking to people who are not in the know.
Well, but yeah, go ahead, Sean.
I think it's shocking for people who didn't necessarily follow very early on Prince, right? Like we saw him as an artist and didn't really follow him on the business record side of things. And so that's kind of what we're seeing now. But I think more than anything, I think what should be talked about here is how it is important to sign your documents and get your shit and get your house in order. Because for a very long time, they basically came to an amicable agreement that, you know, Marvis could use his name. And it was basically you got with old boy when you was like 20 years old. Okay, you didn't work and he had everything in his name and y'all didn't get married. And now you are a special friend in Obit. Right? And that's what happened with Morris. Morris looked up, and because he didn't iron that shit out, because he had been they had been operating with this sort of handshake agreement in place.
So like 40 years. What?
Guess, well, not necessarily 40 years, because he took the name from them as early as, I think it's maybe like 2010. They were operating under like a different name.
Pre-Morris. Okay. They were Flight Time. Pre-Morris, because Prince is the one that fired Jimmy and Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, I mean, look, I say all that to say, ultimately, there is an estate in place that makes decisions. They negotiate on behalf of the estate. Okay. The estate don't give a fuck about your 40 years of history. They just don't.
Man. Yeah.
They don't care. They don't give a fuck about any of that. These are bankers. These are lawyers. These are people who are absolute in their black and white. Mm-hmm. And what they see is an asset. And they are and it appears to me from their statement, they said that they had they were disappointed by Morris's statement and that they thought that they were in amicable discussions. Which sounds to me like they said, you're gonna have to cut us in on that touring money. And Morris was like, you motherfuckers can eat a dick.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that they were looking at this as a bottom line sort of thing. Like, listen, there's probably another couple hundred thousand we can pull from every year with this name. And Morris was probably, you know, like the old Midwest nigga he is, probably told him to eat a dick.
Yeah.
Or they asked him to license the name. Something that had to do with he had to give them some money. And
he had to get, that's what the point was, he had to come up with something that he was under the impression that they had ironed out and worked out. And while that is a fair and understandable stance to have, it is not a black and white situation, particularly when, I know you and my dad had a handshake agreement about you paying $500 rent, my nigga. Okay. But it is not 1992.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm gonna need fair market value.
Yeah, or you got to go, or you got to go because this brownstone is not worth $4 million.
Like, I ain't putting you on the street today. We could try to work something out, but
we like to work something out though. Yeah.
You're not just gonna be here. That's ultimately what this shit sounds like to me. These bankers,
like I said,
they don't give a fuck.
Like I said at the top of the show, shout out to paperwork. Having your paperwork together.
Yeah.
Get you some damn life insurance, people.
Dot your I's, cross your motherfucking T's. Do all the shit you need to do, because ultimately what happens here is what we're seeing right now. Now, listen, is it a blow to Morris and those guys? Sure, because that's literally his name, right? Like, that's not, it's like a nigga, you know, like, that's just insane that he can't literally use his name professionally. Mm-hmm. But let's not be, you know, we don't need to be dense here, right? And obtuse here, right? Like, we know that they can still go out and tour.
Because he was touring under another name when him and Prince were fighting over the time.
It'll be fine. It was a great PR strategy for Morris, because what it does is it puts out in the ether that these people are being harsh. They've taken my name.
Yeah.
Particularly when you use Prince's legacy as someone who has always fought for artists' rights. At least that is what has been perceived.
Yeah.
Even though we know he told Morris, you got to give up, what he said, you got to give up like $350,000 or $400,000. Of
something crazy.
Fucking $1,988, nigga. Like, nigga, that ain't the same hundreds of thousands. Yeah. Like, that's a different hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, so, it's a trip, man. He's a hardcore businessman, and he got everything. You say he got everything in his name. Even when it's funny, like that that scene in Purple Rain at the end, towards the end, when he's playing Purple Rain on the piano and he's picking it apart. Like, that's literally what he did with Kiss.
Mm.
Brown Mark Brown, he was a bass player in the early Revolution. He wrote Kiss. And somebody had a bass line, stuff like that. He presented it to Prince, like, yo, I got a song I think you'd love. Prince stripped the bass line out, changed other things, and registered it as his
changed
record.
Enough to not and, have the
rest and Mark didn't get a dime.
Right.
So this is the kind, and again, and the guy's a genius. Nobody's questioning his genius, but it's just kind of like, he was a slick. He was a slick. That's all I'm saying. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. I got a bunch of shit to do. Everybody got a bunch of shit to do today.
Everybody got a bunch of shit to do.
Peace all to right, IT for being pretty quiet today.
I know. I was chilling.
Nah, I was quick with the mute. She been yelling the whole time.
Oh, yeah. All right, cool.
All right,
see y'all later.
Later.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook, send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.